Okay, good afternoon, Rabbi Osei. What I'd like to do today is talk about Mechiras Chametz, the halachic foundations, how it's done, halach lemaisa, and a number of things that relate to the practical execution of the Mechira, which is two parts. First of all, the hashah, the appointment, when people come to the rabbi's office and appoint him to be their shliach, and the second part, which is when the rabbi meets with the guy and asks and sells the tzibur's chametz to the guy, not his own chametz, but the tzibur's chametz. What we'll do is three parts. First, we'll talk about some of the background for Mechiras Chametz. Then we'll talk about some of the problems which have caused the Mechira to look like what it does look like. And then at the end, we'll talk about some details in terms of practical situations in shuls, in terms of if there's some people who are not religious who don't come to you, or in terms of if somebody's ill, demented, coma, could you sell on their behalf if they are not authorizing the sale? We'll talk about at the end also people who are going away for Shabbat, for Pesach, do they have to clean their house? Could they just sell their entire house? That's what I'd like to speak about. So let's start with the first source. People think that Mechiras Chametz is an invention of the Achronim, and there's nothing further from the truth because it's a Mefurash Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Kol Shah Shemutu Le'achol Mocher Le'Nachri. Mishnah Pesachim. So, Chafal. So, clearly, that Mishnah says it's mutter to sell to a guy, but again, that Mishnah is talking about a very different kind of sale. That's talking about lifting up the box of Cheerios, asking for $5, taking the $5 bill and handing them the box of Cheerios, and they go home with their Cheerios, and you go home with your $5 bill, which is a far cry from our Mechira. So, there's a step further, which is the Tosefta in Pesachim says the following. This is a little bit more similar to what we do, an idea of, you know, the question, again, the overriding question that we have to think about, which is partially the concern of the Bechor Shor, was that is this whole thing a farce? Is this whole game of Mechiras Chametz, is it just a legal fiction, a legal loophole? In Hebrew we call that harama, we call it other things also, chuchatlula. So that's sort of the overriding concern, and with that kind of sale, that you have at least, yes, you have a tosefta. The idea that you're going to sell it now and get it back afterwards, that, yes, is a tosefta. It's like the tosefta that if a Yisrael and a guy were traveling in a boat, now you have to imagine, when my father went to Eretz Yisrael in 1955, when he graduated Yeshiva College, he was just 2 years younger than you, and it took him 3 weeks to get to Israel by boat. When my mother went to study Bar Ilan when she was at Stern for her junior year at Stern College, it took only 2 weeks, because then my mother's a few years younger than my father. So, assume, and that was already in the 1900s, so assume that a few thousand or a few hundred years ago, boats could be more than two or three week trips. So if you're traveling, and sometime during Nisan, you're going to need chametz to eat, you're going to need food to eat, I should say, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, and chametz and Pesach happens to fall out in the middle, you're going to be in trouble. So you could sell your chametz, but then you're going to not have food to live on after Pesach. So the Tosefta says, what you could do is you could sell your chametz to the guy on the boat, or you could give it as a matana to the guy on the boat. V'chozer v'lokeach mimenu la'achar Pesach. You could buy it back after Pesach. So here we have a precedent where you are actually selling your chametz with the anticipation and the plan and maybe even the mutual understanding that you're going to buy it back from him after Pesach. Okay, so that makes our chuchatlula concerns, our legal fiction concerns, a little bit less dramatic because we have a tosefta that indeed goes with that. The only thing is that tosefta has two gusos. The end of that tosefta, according to the Rif, the Bahag has three extra words. Uvilvad shelo ya'arim. As long as you don't do a harama. What are those three words adding to the Tosefta? Tosefta said you could sell it to the guy with the intent of buying it back afterwards. So that already is a harama. So what is the Tosefta adding by saying uvilvad shelo ya'arim? So here we have a very important machlokas rishonim. The Rav Amram Gon, the Ritva, the Miuchas Ritva says, you know what that means? Vilvat Shlo Yarim means you can't do it every year. That would be a haram. If you happen to find yourself once in a lifetime on a boat trip, a multi-week boat trip, a month-long boat trip in the middle of Nisan, it happens once in, how often, how many times in a lifetime do you have a month boat trip during Nisan? Once a lifetime, twice a lifetime, okay, so that I understand. You find yourself in this very compromising situation. You could sell it with the intent to buy it back afterwards. But Shalom Yaron, don't do this every year. If you go with that shita of Rav Amram Gaon and the Ritva, then we basically have knocked out the Mechiras Chametz in our communities as we know it today, which we do every year. So Baruch Hashem, the Beis Yosef does not paskin like that. The Beis Yosef rejects that girsa, that understanding, and says, no, you know what Vivat Shel Yarim means? The Beis Yosef understands, the Shulchan Aruch understands, that it has to be a Mechira Gemura, without a T'nai. You can't play games. It's not like a fake Mechira, partial Mechira. No, it's a bona fide Mechira. It's not a Mechira Lizman. It's not a Maton Al-Manas, a Mechira or a Maton Al-Manas Lahachzir. No, it's a Mechira Gemura. It just happens to be you and perhaps the guy both have the plan to sell it back afterwards. That's how the Beis Yosef rejects that girsa, and certainly that understanding of girsa and paskins in the Shulchan Aruch.
How do we understand Mechira Gemura in this case now?
Belishum Tanai, those are the words of Shulchan Aruch. Mechir Gemura, Zakti Shulchan Aruch, Belishum Tanai.
Even though there is an understood Tanai.
Correct, that is correct. You could understand whatever you want, the guy can understand whatever you want. In previous years we did this, I sold to you, you sold to me, the second peso was over, but there's no Tanai. Yeah. Excellent. Matana Nasla Haksi Shema Matana everywhere except for Mechiras Chametz. Probably because of Chumrah the what's it called? The Chametz. You're gonna say, oh, but Eishes Ish, where we hold. Oh, also by Eishes Ish also, Matama Nasla Haksi doesn't work. Is that correct? Am I wrong? They talk about it because she's lo makna nafsha be pachas mishal pruta, and therefore it does work or it doesn't work by Matana Nasla Haksi. Does not work, right. So by Isha and by Chametz is the two places where Matan or Mechira, whatever it is, Amnas Lahatu doesn't, even though Shema Matan in general, here it does not. It's not Shema Matan. Okay, so we have precedent for Mechira. We have precedent for Mechira is going to be back. However, both of the Mechiras that we're talking about, the Mechira of the Shulchan Aruch, is still talking about a very specific kind of Mechira where it's going to the guy's house. The Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, indeed, is you sell it to a guy, Shemichutz Lebeso. That's a lashon from the Shulchan Hadashin. The Shulchan Hadashin was asked this question. He says, the Shulchan Hadashin, of course, there are two Masorahs in this, but there's a Masorah that the Shulchan Hadashin wrote his own questions. So the Shulchan Hadashin asked himself the following question, but we can be medayik in his question because of the Shulchan Hadashin. Somebody who wanted to give to a Nachri Chutz Lebeso, the Matana Gemura, va'oso Nachri will give it back to him after Pesach. Is that okay? Again, same kind of situation that we're describing where it's understood. It's a game. I know I'm going to sell it to you, you'll sell it to me afterwards, or you'll give it back to me afterwards. But the word that the Trumas Hadeshin added to his question is Goyshe Michutz Lebeso. And guess what? The Shulchan Aruch took those two words. Mocher LeGoyshe Michutz Lebeso. So the Shulchan Aruch, of course, the Beis Yosef quoted that Shulchan Aruch, so the Shulchan Aruch is indeed coming out with a mechira that's okay, even if you're going to sell it back after Pesach, but it has to be Michutz Lebeis. That means you don't have the Cheerio box in your house. The guy took the Cheerio box to their house. It's just there's a mutual understanding that he's going to give it back to you, sell it back to you after Pesach. So when did this all change? That changed in the time of the Bach in the early 1600s. I was actually in Poland this past summer, on a family, on an ancestry trip. And the Polish tour guide was pointing out to us a fascinating thing. He said, Poland had 30 million people before the war, 6 million Jews, no, I'm sorry, 3 million Jews, 3,500,000 Jews, 3 million of them were killed. So that means the Jews were about 10% of the population. But he pointed out that every single village. It's not like there were some Jews. Of course, there's shtetlach where there were predominantly Jewish, a very high percentage Jewish, or entirely Jewish. But every single village in all of Poland, he says, no such thing as a village without Jews. Why? Because there was a license that was given hundreds of years ago to the Jews specifically to own the tavern, to own the inns and the taverns. They were given liquor licenses for whatever reason. The Jews were given this liquor license by the Polish, whatever they are, the Polish government, the monarch, the king, whoever he was. So it actually was, again, I had heard this from the Bach, years ago when I had, you know, worked on the sugya, but the Polish tour guide said that this indeed was the case, that the Polish Jews had these taverns, these inns, that were all, any tiny village, which was a row, you know, passageway through from town to town, the Jews owned the inns and owned the taverns at the inns, and therefore the Jews were all in the schnapps business. And that's the shaila that the Bach raised in, again, the 1600s, in Medina Zu. I don't know exactly where the Bach lived, if he was in Poland proper, or, you know, give or take 100 miles or two, 200 miles from, you know, Poland. The Medina Zu, Sherov Masu Matan Hu B'Yayin Saraf. The majority of our business is with liquors, with whiskey, with vodka. And therefore, you can't sell it to the way the Shulchan Aruch articulated, Goyshe Michutz Lebeiso. Because that means you have to lift up 20 barrels of whiskey and lift them up and bring them to the guy's house. It's just not feasible. So that's the time in history where there was a little bit of a shift, and we had to figure out what to do with that new mitzvah, where you can't just lift up the barrels of whiskey, which is ultimately the same problem that we have nowadays, because even though I don't have 20 barrels of whiskey in my house, but I have 3 boxes of chametz. Not a big deal. A guy could come to my house and lift up 3 boxes, and if they would, that would be great. The problem is, if the rabbi is going to be making this deal with the guy, and the rabbi is representing 100 families in 100 homes with 100 different schedules, you're going to have the guy go, and all these 100 families are home at a convenient time, lift up 3 boxes in each of those 100 homes. That's something that's impractical. So therefore, we now have to figure out some other way to leave the chametz where it is physically and still have the chametz own it. But again, the Shulchan Aruch said, we want to fulfill that. So how do I make the chametz own, the guy owns the chametz, and it's not in my house, it's in his house, so we have a very easy solution. The easy solution is that besides me selling the chametz to the guy, I first do what? Sell him, rent him, we'll talk about that in a moment, I rent him the land where my chametz is stored. For example, the cabinet, the pantry, the basement, my wine cellar, wherever it is in my house, I rent him the land. So now whose land is it? It's the guy's land. So where is this chametz? Is it in my house? No, it's michutz lebeiso. So that's what the Achronim suggest as far as getting the chametz into the guy's rishus. There is a Prima Gadim who was asked the following shaila. The Prima Gadim was asked, so one more thing. So the Bach, when he talks about this issue of making sure that the guy is... You're not giving the chametz physically to the guy. You're going to leave it in your house. But wait a second. Isn't that a game? It's my house, under my lock and key. And the guy owns not only the chametz, but even the house in the basement of mine. But the doors are locked. So Bach there says, no, you have to give the guy the key. And if you don't give the guy the key, what does that show? That you didn't really sell him the house. Bach and the Taz are machmir for that. So if you... We'll note, you can pass this around. We'll talk about it more about Rikos, but if you could just pass this around, you'll note that in this shtar, which is the form that, based on Rabbi Willick's form, which I have a few additions, which I'll tell you shortly, you'll notice that in one section, it will say that the keys to my home can be found such and such, meaning I'm not going to ask my balabatim for 100 balabatim to please give me their keys, because after Pesach, only one thing will happen. The balabatim will be angry at the rabbi who lost all their keys. So the easier way is, instead of giving the keys to the guy, which is what the Bach suggests and the Taz require, we're a little makel, but to sort of assuage the Shitas HaBach and the Taz, who require the key be given to the guy, we have at least, Mr. Guy, I'm not handing you the key right now, but if you need to get in, the keys can be found with the super of the building, the next door neighbor, me, because I'll be home, wherever the situation might be, depending on the family situation. With that in mind, I just want to tell a story, I'll take your questions. With that in mind, the Prima Gadim was asked the following shaila. The Prima Gadim was asked, the Yid sold his schnapps business to the guy, and you can imagine the guy in this little town where the Prima Gadim lived was only too happy to be the new owner of a lot of schnapps. So the way we'll see when we talk about Kinyan Kesef in a few minutes, the way the Kinyan Kesef works is, how much is the schnapps worth? Let's say this tavern has $20,000 worth of schnapps. The guy oftentimes doesn't even have $20,000 to pay for the schnapps. So how is he going to pay for the schnapps? we'll do a Kenyan Kasef. He'll give me a Shavar Pruta now. He'll give me a nickel now. And the rest will be Zalkei Falav B'milva. He owes me $19,999.95, payable when? Motzei Pesach. Motzei Pesach, he could have two choices. He could either give me cash, or he could
Chas v'shalom.
Give me Shavet Kesef of $19,999.95 in the form of the schnapps that he didn't drink. Right? If he drank some of it, then he'll only pay me back whatever's left, because he'll have to pay for what he drank, because it's his. Right. And he'll pay me back. He drank, let's say, $1,000, so he'll pay me $19,000 of schnapps and $1,000 of cash. That's the setup of how we work the monies. With the milveh that we... So again, the guy gives the rabbi a shavet kesef, a pruta for each Jew that he's buying. Let's say there are 100 Jews, so he'll give 500 cents. Let's assume a nickel for a person. It's a little bit more than shavet pruta. So 500 cents, $5 he'll give you. And then the other, whatever the value is, he owes us after Pesach. So what happened? Guy comes, knocks on the Prima Gadam's door on the second night of Pesach, and he said that last night, while we were having the Seder upstairs, guess what the Polish guy was doing in my basement, in my tavern? He had the keys, and it's his, so what did he do? He let himself in, and he drank bottle after bottle after bottle. And I'm worried that after Pesach, he's going to have to pay money, right? He could either pay back all the stuff, all the schnapps, but the schnapps aren't there because he consumed the schnapps. So now he's going to have to pay back the money for the schnapps that he consumed. And he doesn't have a penny to his name, this guy who I sold my chametz to. And now he wants to come. The second night, he's asking to... I see him on the way to my house, coming for another night, another party in my basement. So can I, listen to what the Prima Gadam was asked, can I take, while he's drunk, the second night, after he gets drunk, once he's drunk, can I take the keys out of his pocket? And then he no longer has, but the Bach said you have to give him the keys. What does it mean? He owns the basement, right? He owns the basement. How can you take the keys away from him? But again, there's this gigantic hefsid that the tavern owner is going to be suffering if the guy, you know, keeps on doing this every night of Pesach. He's going to drink thousands of dollars of schnapps that he doesn't have the money to pay for. So while he's drunk, could I take the key out of his pocket? That was the shayla the Prima Gadam was asked. So, what? I don't have. I have to look it up. I assume it's around Taf Lamed Vav, Taf Lamed Ches. I don't remember exactly. I don't have it in my notes where. So Prima Gadam says, no, you can't, but you could have the policemen or the officers or whoever, the shoterim, you could have them do it. But you can't take the key out of his pocket. Because again, this Bach says that if you're selling the land to the guy, but not just the chametz, the land, and he doesn't have a key, what kind of sale of land or of the, what kind of schirus rishus of your property is it to the guy if he doesn't have the key, if you take the key away from him, you don't give him the key? So that was the Prima Gadam's kula b'chorma, that you could make sure he can't get in, but you can't actually take the key yourself. Yeah.
How would the police enforce that then? I assume their eyes would be real sale as well.
Good question. This is just, I'm telling you a story from the Prima Gadam.
So he said you cannot steal the guy from him.
You cannot take the keys from the guy's pocket while he's drunk, but you can ask the police to do that. That was the Prima Gadam's answer. Okay. So now we're going to have to speak about... So that's basically at this point of the Bach is the turning point in history where we organize a different kind of sale where the chametz stays in my house physically, but it still is owned by the guy, and the guy also will therefore acquire the land where the chametz is so that you can have the sale of the chametz chutz lebeisto as the Shulchan Aruch required. So now we're going to talk about the next point of the shir, and that is what kenyanim, how do you sell chametz or anything to a guy? And the preface, as far as the Rishonim are concerned, is the following. I'll tell you the following story that happened about 25 years ago on the third floor of First Hall. Before they built our new, beautiful new building over here, the Gluck Center for Jewish Studies, or Jewish Learning, or whatever we're called here, the Kollel Elyon used to learn, and the Kollel Yadin Kollel did not learn in Fish in the old Beis Medrash. This building wasn't existent. They learned in the First Hall, third floor, the Beis Medrash, which now JSS uses every morning. That's where they learned all day, the Kollel Elyon, in the Ivory Tower. Right outside of there was something called a telephone booth. Most of you don't know what a telephone booth is, so there's a telephone booth right outside. In the middle of the afternoon, Seder, Rabbi Schechter got a call, not this time of the year, some other, I don't know, some other time of the year. Rabbi Shachter got an emergency phone call from Rabbi so-and-so from the Midwest. Please, I need to speak to Rabbi Shachter urgently. So Rabbi Shachter came out of the base medrash and he came to the phone. Yes, who is this? Hi, my name is Rabbi so-and-so. I'm the rabbi of congregation such and such in somewhere in Illinois, in Chicago, and somewhere in the Midwest. And I have a congregant of mine who has a dairy farm or a cattle ranch, and there's a mother who is giving birth for the first time. She's pregnant, that she's going to be giving birth any minute now, and the baby that will be born will have a din of bechor. And we know the Shulchan Aruch says that you're supposed to try to avoid having a baby with kedushas bechor, because then it's also the baby will be even though there's no way to bring the carbon bechor, but it'll still be also begiza, bavoda, yirachi, it's time. It's going to be very difficult to manage if you want to have an economical, efficient ranch or farm with one or multiple animals that you sort of have to, you can't touch them, you have to treat them well, you can't do anything, you can't gain anything from them. So he says, the way the Rishonim discusses, the way the Gemara in Bechor says, you have to be makna, a part of the mother, to the guy. That minhag is to be makne, a part of the ear of the mother to the guy, so that the baby that's born is a baby of a shutfus of a guy and a yid, and if the mother is a shutfus between a guy and a yid, there's no kedushas bechor on the baby that is born from that shutfus mother. So could you, Rabbi Shachter, could you please tell me how I am makne, the mother cow, the pregnant cow, to the guy? So Rabbi Shachter said very simply, the same way you do mechiras chametz. The same kinyan that you do for mechiras chametz, because what's chametz? Metaltalin. What's an animal? Well, metaltalin. I know there's some special kinyan for animals sometimes, but it's also metaltalin. You're makne metaltalin to a guy in the same way for chametz as you do by bechor, which is why rabbis say all of the halachas that we're going to talk about now is the rishonim who discussed it are primarily not in hilchas chametz, because the issues of this discussion, as we're about to talk about, only started in the 1600s, 1700s. The Rishonim who talk about everything we're going to talk about now is all in Bechoris. The end of the story was, Rabbi Shechter said, sell it the same way you sell chametz. And the rabbi said, excuse me, Rabbi, could you please remind me how to do that? Which is not a good sign. But so now that's what we're going to do. We're going to say exactly what kinyanim you do to sell the chametz to a guy. It all starts with a pasuk in Vayikra. Pasuk says, "V'chi simkru mekala misecha o kanom yada misecha." So that those three words, "o kanom yada misecha," the Gemara Bava Metzia Mem Zayin have a machlokas whether this teaches us that min haTorah maos konos or meshicha is kona. Now, the Torah in the pasuk that I just mentioned to you, "kanom yad amisecha." What does amisecha mean? Amisecha means your friend, your brother, your fellow. That means there's a machlokas in the Gemara, Rish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, whether to sell to Amisecha, your brother, it's with Maos Konos or Meshicha Kona. Machlokas Amoraim. But wait. If the Torah says, let's say, for example, we hold, like Rav Yochanan, the Maos Konos. If it says that you're selling La Amisecha, meaning to your friend, to a fellow Jew, with Maos Konos, that means how you sell to somebody who's not your amisecha. How do you sell to a Gentile? Well, if the opposite, if it's to a Jew you sell with maos, that means to a guy you would sell the opposite of maos with meshicha. Or according to Rish Lakish, it says that konom yad amisecha means davar nekanam liyad yad. You hand it over. You do a meshicha. You hand it over biyad with your hands to your fellow Jew. So how will you sell it to a guy? How will you sell metaltim to a guy? With the opposite, with kesef. So we have machlokas about how to sell to a Jew. Machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan, Rish Lakish. And that same machlokas will be the inverse of how you sell to a guy. If to a Jew you sell with black, then the guy you sell with white. If to a Jew you sell with white, then to a guy you sell with black. How do we paskin? Look at Rashi. Rashi paskins in Kedushin. Rashi paskin that the way you sell to a Jew is with Meshicha, and therefore the way you sell Metaltan to a guy, the way you transfer property to a guy, will be with Maos. If we stop here, the way the cattle farm owner will sell the mother, the pregnant mother, to his Gayesha rancher nearby, is the animal somewhere in the field. he's going to sit in the office with the guy, and the guy, who will now soon own part of the mother, will give him a $5 bill, or a quarter, or a nickel, and buy a tiny piece of the mother's ear, and the guy is a shutuf with the Jew owning this mother. The baby does not have Kedushas Bechor. And so too, if you want to sell chametz, which is metaltalin, you will ask the guy to give you money. He'll give you a quarter, he'll give you a dime, he'll give you a nickel. And the chametz, wherever it's situated, in your basement, becomes his chametz. Even though it's worth $50, but he'll pay, he owes you the $49.95. But he gave you a shavaprut, you did a kinyan kasef right now. Hold on, please. That's if we stop with Rashi. The problem is that Tosis in Kiddushin quotes an opinion of Rabbeinu Tam that says the exact opposite. Tosis says that since that not like Rashi that you sell to a Jew with Mashiach, but rather you sell to a Jew with Kesef. Well, if you sell to a Jew with Kesef, then how do you sell to a guy with Mashiach? That's going to be very difficult. Because if you have to sell to a guy with Mashiach, that means you have to actually be where the cow is. Or in our case, you have to actually invite the guy into your basement to do a Mashiach on every box of Cheerios and every barrel of schnapps in the wine cellar and in every wine cellar in the town that you, the rabbi, are selling for. Okay, so how do we paskin? Like Rashi, like Tosis? Do you have to sell the guy with Mashiach or with Kesef? Says Tosis in Avodah Zarah, it's a suffix, we don't know. What happens when you don't know how to be matna to a guy? Whether it's with Mashiach or with Kesef? Says Tosis, you have to do both. You have to do Mashiach and Kesef. So Rabosai, how do you do Kinyan Kesef with a guy? He's going to give you a nickel, and you do Kinyan Kesef. How do you do Mashiach? You have to bring him into your house, and he lifts up every box. That's the beginning of the issue, of the problem of modern Mechiras Chametz. If, again, this is the main point of the shir, this line I'm saying right now. In order to definitely be Makne Metaltle, meaning Chametz, to a guy, you need both Mashiach and Kesef. But even though we will do Kinyan Kesef, Mashiach is impractical. How could the guy lift up every single box in every single basement in your shul of 150 families? That's impractical, it's impossible. So because of that, we are now going to have this third part of the shir, where we're going to have to figure out, if I can't do Kinyan Mashiach to solve my suffix, whether you do Kesef or Mashiach, I need to do both. So I'll do with Kesef, but I'm not sure if Mashiach, I can't do Mashiach. So we're now going to list five other Kinyanim that hopefully one of them might work in lieu of the Mashiach that I really should be doing to cover my bases of either Ma'os Konos or Mashiach Konos when I'm trying to sell to the guy. I'll say this again because this is the main point of this year. When you sell to a guy, definitively, you have to cover your bases. We don't know if it's through Kesef or through Mashiach. Since practically, physically, we're not able to do Mashiach practically, we have to figure out what other kinyan could I use to take the place of the Mashiach that it really is what I should be doing. So we will always do a kinyan kesef with the guy. He'll give us money. He'll give the rabbi money to each of, for a kinyan kesef for each of the congregants. Let's say you have 100 congregants, and he gives you a nickel for each. So he'll give you $5 for your 100 congregants, 500 cents for your 100 congregants, 5 cents apiece. That's a kinyan kesef, shavapruta, for your 100 congregants. And now you want him to do Mashiach, but he doesn't, physically, it's impossible. So we're now going to do many other kinyanim, which we'll talk about right now, in lieu, in place of that Mashiach that he really should be doing. Questions?
If you're buying the karka also, why wouldn't he have to pay?
He will. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Meaning the zokevil of the milveh
is only on the outstanding debt for the chametz that he didn't pay up front yet, he'll pay up afterwards.
So he's, let's say 100 families, he's going to pay up front 500 cents, which is $5.
Right. Really, he owes you $5,000, but he's paying you $5 up front.
So at the end of Pesach, does he get this $5 back? Like, why is it, I mean, it's a small amount of money, I guess, for some, but why would the guy want to give it?
Well, no, at the end of Pesach, he's only going to have to pay me the rest of the loan, which is $4,995.
So why would a guy want to just give up
$5? He's not giving it. I gave him...
He's paying you.
Oh, that's very simple. Because we play with the numbers so that it doesn't hurt him. We always make the guy win. Yeah. The guy will always end up with an extra $50 or $200-$300 at the end of the day. Yeah. You know, we'll buy it back for him at a more expensive rate than we sold to him. Mm-hmm. So we'll be nice. We'll be very nice because we want him to sell it back to us and we want him to be available next year. So it's always in the guy's best interest to work with you. Okay? Fine. So we are now going to figure out the other modes of kinyanim that we're going to do in order to accomplish what we need to accomplish. So let's start with kinyan chatzer. Kinyan chatzer, I mentioned before that in order to get this chametz out of your rishus, like the Trumas Hadesh and Shulchan Aruch require, what do we do besides selling the chametz? We also want to give him the karka. Oh, but once he owns the karka, we could do something else. Once you own the karka, I could sell him the chametz, not just the kinyan kesef, mashiach is not practical, I could sell you the chametz through kinyan chatzer on that karka that I'm renting to you anyway. So what this means is the following. This means that besides the guy giving you a nickel for each person to buy the chametz, the guy is also going to want to do a kinyan on every basement, on the land, or every cabinet that you have. How are you makne karka to a guy? So Baruch Hashem, it's a lot easier to be makne karka to a guy than to be makne metaltalin. Because we said that by metaltalin you need either kesef or mashicha. That is not the case. When it comes to karka, at least rental, selling it is a little harder. When it comes to mashicha, when it comes to karka, the Shulchan Aruch Chosher Mishpat Kuf Tzadi Dalet says schirus is only with kesef. All he has to do is give you money. You don't even need a shtar. For selling it, maybe you need a shtar also, kesef and shtar. But for schirus, to rent it to the guy, for example, like for 7 days, 8 days if you want, that he only has to give kesef. So what will you do? You'll say, Mr. Guy, let's call him Louis. Louis, give me, no offense to anyone here named Louis, it's nothing wrong with the name Louis. Louis, give me a nickel for the Cheerios that you want to buy for me, and give me another nickel to rent the land so it's not in my house. Now, once you're renting that land with the second nickel, so that it's your, so it's out of my house, but once you're renting that land, you know what else we could do? Let that, your ownership of the land, serve as a kinyan chatzer to be kona, the chametz that's sitting on your land. Right? Because I don't know if I have to substitute mashicha, which was supposed to have happened, but we can't practically accomplish mashicha. So why don't we use a kinyan chatzer as well? So Rabosai, we'll get that in a minute. I'll give you the shtar that outlines all these different kinyanim in a moment. So we're going to do a kinyan chatzer as well. However, Rabosai, what is wrong with using a kinyan chatzer to sell as a vehicle, as a means, as a mode of acquisition to be makne the chametz to a guy? What's the problem with chatzer working for a guy? Right. If we assume that chatzer is mitam shlichos, we learned in Kiddushin that ain't shlichos le guy. So if a guy is not in the parish of shlichos, what does kinyan chatzer mean? That the chatzer is going to be his shliach. But if the guy is not in the parasha of shliach, that means shlichus is not shayach to a guy. This is the question that Ketzos asks in Kuf Tzadi Dalet, Simon Kuf Tzadi Dalet Choshen Mishpat. The Ketzos asks, how could chatzer work for the guy to acquire the chametz in lieu of mashiach, which you can't do practically? After all, in order for chatzer to work, if we assume shlichus, I'm sorry, chatzer mitam, Yad, we're not talking about Yad. If you assume chatzer's mitam shlichus, and a guy's not in the pasha shlichus, then a guy can't do a kinyan chatzer. So that option is not really so great. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to try another kinyan on for size. You know what we'll do? We'll talk about kinyan agav. That's what the Ketzos suggests. What's kinyan agav? Kinyan agav is the following. Kinyan agav is, the way I think it's best explained is by the Evan HaEzel, or Rav Shimon Shkap, who says the following. What does the word agav mean literally?
Incidental.
Literally. What does the word agav mean?
On top of.
On the back. Okay. In English, I call it a piggyback. It's a piggyback kinyan. Why don't you make a shahakal on the cream cheese when you have a cream cheese bagel? It's tafel. Now I'm going to ask you along the shashayim. Is pshad in ikar and tafel that cream cheese doesn't need a bracha? Or is pshat that the hamotzi that you make on the bread is chal on the cream cheese? You hear the shayla? So when I make a kinyan on an ikker, what's ikker? Real estate. Why do you call it real estate? Because it's real. It's chashiv. It's more chashiv than metaltalin. Real estate is the ikker. All of metaltalin, by definition, are tafel to the ikker. So if I'm going to be makna to you something chashuv, something that's tough, something that's ikr, the things that are tertiary, the things that are secondary, the things that are tafel to the karka, something that's metaltalin, will be nikra to you memela. Now where do those metaltalin have to be? Anywhere in the world. As opposed to kinen chatzer, where the chatzer is kona, that which is on top of it, mash'enken, kinen agav, works anywhere in the world. So if I'm going to be makna to you, dal and am is right here, you could be kona my yacht that's docked in Venice, in Italy. Right? That's an advantage of agav. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to use kinyan agav, says the ketzos. That's how I should do my mechiras chametz. Chatzer might not work because chatzer is shlichus as work for a guy. But you know what I could do? Now that I'll be makna to him the dal of amis, or the amma by amma, it doesn't mean a shir. Now that I'll be makna to him my wine cellar or my pantry, you know what? I could be makna to him as a tafel to that hakna of real estate. I can be makna to him the chametz as a tafel that's agav, piggybacking on the kinyan of the real estate. So Mela, when you give me that second nickel to rent my real estate, to rent my pantry or my freezer, I will be derech that, agav that. Incidental to that, I'll be makna to you my chametz also. So I'll use kinyan agav in hope or in lieu of the kinyan mashicha that I wish I could be doing, but it's just not practical to do. Now, why did I tell you this is an interesting lumdus of how you could understand agav? Is it pshad with the cream cheese that cream cheese doesn't need a bracha, or that the hamotzi on the bread is chal on the cream cheese? I'm telling you that lumdus to answer a kasha that the achronim ask about using agav. Agav is a kinyan mide. Okay, so if we assume that agav is a kinyan mide rabbanan, so how in the world could it get rid of my chametz, which is an iser daraisa for me to own? That's a question that the achronim ask about any kinyan rabbanan that we're going to use. Again, we know that kesef is daraisa. We know the mashicha would work daraisa, but I can't do mashicha. So instead of mashicha, I have to do some other kinyan. I'm going to fill it with agav, but agav is only kinyan mide rabbanan. How could a kinyan mide rabbanan work for getting rid of my chametz mide daraisa? So listen to the lamas I'm going to tell you about. If we assume that pshat by the cream cheese sandwich is that the hamotzi on the ikur, on the bread, on the bagel, is chal also on the cream cheese, if you take that, says the Eben HaEzel, the same idea is true by the kinyan agav. It's not that I do a kinyan on chatzer and then I'm using a kinyan agav to make the metaltalin also go to you. It's that what kinyan agav does is it makes the kinyan on the karka bichal on the metaltalin. In the same way, the bracha on the bagel, the hamotzi on the bagel, covers the cream cheese. The kinyan d'oraisa of the karka is chal also on the metaltalin. So you have operating a kinyan d'oraisa. Agav is making the kinyan d'oraisa of the karka is operating on the metaltalin, and maybe that would work to be makna the metaltalin to the goy. That's as far as the lumdus of agav. Again, the issue with agav is that it is drabanan, and if you like my lumdus, that's great. I know some of you might be thinking there might be a hole in my lumdus. I'm not even going to answer you because there is a little bit of a hole in the logic that I just told you, which if you think that we don't have to go into that.
But the whole requirement to sell is only drabanan because midaraisa you mavatal chametz balev.
I don't want to go into that. No, let's assume that mechiras chametz works on its own. What you're saying is in the machlokas achrona that maybe mechiras chametz will only work if it's drabanan, but
no,
we're not going there.
If you've been mavatal balev, right?
So if you aren't mavatal, there is a chiyuv daraisa. So let's assume you aren't mavatal.
Well, the assumption is people are.
Well, I'll show you that that's not the case, because if you're mevatel it, then how in the world are you going to sell that which is hefker already?
You don't have to.
I just asked you a question.
Yeah.
If you're mevatel it, you don't own it. So how in the world are you selling it the next morning? It must be that you're selling.
That you sell first and then you're mevatel.
We don't do that. That's not true. You sell on Erev Pesach, you do mevatel the night before. Yeah, the question I'm asking is the Chasam Sofer's question on what you said. I know what you're saying is right. There are Achronim who say that. Bechor Shor says what you're saying. I'm asking the Chasam Sofer's question on what you just said, which was the Bechor Shor.
Okay. Why don't we rely on the Bechor in general? Why are we even doing the Bechor?
The answer is, like, your question is asked by the Gemara. The Gemara says, Habodek tzarech shivatel, and also says, I'm sorry, the opposite. Also, if you did bittel, why do you have to do bedika? So there's machlokas rishonim. So the Ran says, because...
The reason
is not going to cover you, because you still have chametz in your house. The reason
it's not your house.
It is in your house. You
no, it's not. But you're right. You're right. No, you're right. Physically, it's in your... It's inside of your house, but there's a mechitza there, right? There's a mechitza sasara, and it belongs to the guy, and it's his rishus, so you have a mechitza sasara.
Oh, so we take all that into account in the mechira.
No, it's a separate halacha, shalo yav halacha. There is a din. This is a true thing. If you have a box of Cheerios in your basement, you sold the guy the land underneath that box of Cheerios, that shelf, and he owns the Cheerios. So he owns the Cheerios and the land where that shelf is. That's not enough. Halacha l'mayis, so you also need a mechitza there.
Could have done with the
mechitza
and without mechira.
No, because then
it's... the bedika, and the mechitza sasara and the chametz in your house, the mechira doesn't accomplish anything.
So that will not help you if you sold the land, if you did steal the land? Well, the chametz is whose?
The chametz, I was mevatel, so technically it's not mine. It used to be mine, but I was mevatel, so it's either hefker or it's my bottom. So I was
about to.
I also did a
bedika
on anything else.
I'm not sure what the
bedika
did. Because you have chametz right here.
But if the bedika did nothing, because the shemayah will also, then the mechira is also going to do nothing. And if I just need to put up the mechitza hasara, so that'll help me without
the
mechira.
So what about the other answer in the Rishonim? No. That the purpose of the bedika is not just shemayah will achlo, but that it's. What are the two answers?
I thought the other answer is that you shouldn't violate by
Yerah. That you won't write when you find it. Okay, fine. So I don't, we can't go. We can't go there now. Fine. So let's move on.
Who says this? Who brings this down to Abate by the Kenyan Agam helps by the Raisa?
I'm using the Lamdus of the Evan Ha'azel or Reb Shimon to answer that question that the Akronim ask. Fine. There is one extra point. By the way, you should know that the Beit Halacha says that the main Kenyan that actually happens when the rabbi is going to transfer the chametz to the guy is actually kinyan agav, as we just discussed. That's the main kinyan. The main kinyan is actually kinyan agav. That's why it is important that we spoke about it for a few minutes. And I want to point out one other thing. In order to do agav, what happens is I, the Jew, am makne karka, my karka, to the guy. And one through, one incidental to the haknas karka, which is the ikar, to the guy, I'm also... alongside that is being schlepped along, incidental to that agav, that the tafa, which is the metalton, the chametz. Rabbi Osai, can you please raise your hand if you own karka? Could you please raise your hand if you plan on doing mechiras chametz? There are more hands that should be raised for this. All of you should be doing mechiras chametz. So if the main kinyan for chametz is agav, and in order to do agav, you have to makne karka to a guy. Apparently, none of you are going to be able to do agav. I'm not really sure how you're planning to do your mechiras chametz.
You're subleasing your cabinet. I rent my cabinet for my.
Okay, so that's what I want to talk right now. So, could a sublease be enough to be makne the karka? So the answer is, especially since the contract that you have with your, the lease that you have with your landlord, Rabbi Hess, is that you will not sublease your apartment to anybody.
Right.
Who's not named on this lease. So another Behuda asks this question. Another Behuda says in his Shas Shivas Tzion, which is his son, the another Behuda's son, I think, published from his father, that it's okay. Even though you're renting, you're subleasing the land, you're not subleasing it for other people to move in, you're subleasing it just to hold Kalim there. And that's okay. And more than that is the following. Rabbo say, none of you own land. But you know what you do have? Do you have a makom in the Beis Medrash? Says the Rashba. The Rashba was asked a fascinating kasha. Says the Rashba, this is a great story. We don't have time for it, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway because it's a great story. The Rashba had the following situation. There was a chassan who loved his kala. And he promised his kala half of his wealth. And he did a kinyan with her, with a kinyan agav. So she's all happy. And she got herself, I think they call it gold diggers, right? Baruch Hashem, you don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, so those of you who live in the street or have friends who live in the street know that this term is called a gold digger. So you have a gold digger, marries a rich guy, and she gets herself, with the kinyan agav, half of his wealth. the relationship sours and the engagement breaks. Guess what the guy says? All of my money was in stocks and bonds and savings accounts. I don't have any karka. And I was makne all my wealth, to half my wealth to her with a kinyan, agav karka. But I don't have karka to be the agav on. So I was never makne. The kinyan that I did, gave all this stuff to my kala, didn't work because agav means you makne the karka and along that with the other stuff. But I don't own any karka. I'm a yeshiva bacher. That was the question. And therefore, the ex-chasan wanted to cancel the transfer of his property to his ex-kala. Says the Rashba, sorry buddy, in order to be considered your land, enough of your land that you could be makne something, agav that karka to somebody else, first of all, it could be schiris alone. And it could even be, kol echad ve'echad miyachi la'atzmo mokam yodua leishev in the base medrash. You have a mokam in the base medrash, that enough is enough of an ownership of land that you could be give over to the person and agav that property that you're giving over to the other person, the guy in this place or his kal in this situation, to give the metaltan agav that piece of land. This is the Shas that shows Harashba, Chelek Aleph, 935. Tough kuf lamed hay. So, fascinating. That means that even though all of you said you don't own land, you will still be able to do a kinyan agav because you all have some place that you call home. A dorm room, or a makom in the beis medrash, or a seat in shul. Yes, what's your question?
Would you have to specify in
which land? No, absolutely not. No.
The makom that the Rosh was talking about, is that a makom that you bought?
No, we're saying even if it's a place that's miyuchad for you in the beis medrash or in the shul.
Is that how I thought you had to buy makom?
So he's saying not like that. That's exactly the chiddush that he's saying. I would have thought it has to be something that you own and your mamish takes something that you have the bialos on, you transfer the bialos to somebody else. That's what I would have thought. Comes as Rashba and as Bechadish to us, even if you don't have that. Even if it's just a makom that's miyuchad for you, that's enough for this kinyan agav to work. Yeah.
Sometimes I go into the basement and someone's sitting by makom, that means it's not miyuchad to me.
It's miyuchad to you, but you're not giving them a hard time. You should have asked, what happens if this guy who doesn't have a makom in the basement? How does he going to sell his chametz? You're right, I hear. Yeah.
Based on this, could a homeless person who had a spot on the street?
Yeah. That would be the case. Okay, fine. So Rabosai, we started with saying that you need a kinyan kesef and a kinyan mashiach. A mashiach is not practical. So what are we going to do instead of that? We're going to do a kinyan chatzir. We said kinyan chatzir has a weakness because kinyan chatzir might not apply to goyim. So we'll do a kinyan aga. But aga, we said earlier, might have a weakness because it's only kinyan darabanan. How will it help for daraisa? So we're going to do yet a third kinyan. Right? We did kesef, chatzir, aga. We're going to do a fourth kinyan. We're going to do kinyan chalipin. Chalipin is great because it works on everything for everywhere, right? Chalipin is great. Where do we know kinyan chalipin from? What? Right. Rus is mida. Machlokas Rambam and Ramban. Is that what you're referring to? Machlokas Rambam and Ramban. Ramban and something. Maybe it's the Rambam. Machlokas Ramban, if when there's a halacha that we never knew in the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim, if that is a gili that was always true, but we just didn't know about it, or it's actually a chiddush of that came after Torah, but that we're not going to get to. Let's assume, certainly we have to be on the concern, that it might only be Durabanan. So, Kinyan Chalipin, first of all, how do you do the Kinyan Chalipin? Kinyan Chalipin is machlokas, if you have Kehle Shel Makan or Kehle Shel Kona. So who is the Kona in the case, we pass in Kehle Shel Kona. Who is the Kona when you're selling, when the rabbi is selling on your behalf, the chametz to the guy? The guy. So who's clear you're going to use? Right, so the guy will take his yarmulke, and you don't know. The guy will take his pocket knife, the guy will take his tie, the guy will take his Mont Blanc pen, and hand it to the rabbi. The rabbi will lift it up, and that will be Kehle Shel Kona, thereby showing the Kamiras Das of the guy, therefore being Makne, the Metaltalin to the guy. Obviously, the question is the same question. If we assume, as I just mentioned, that in Megillas Ris, the Kinyan Chalipin is only Durabanan, we're still a little bit bothered by the fact that it's only Kinyan Durabanan. Maybe Kinyan Durabanan might not be able to take care of your ownership of Chametz Midaraisa. There is a lamdus that Reb Shimon says that Kinyanim Durabanan could indeed take care of an issue Midaraisa. So for example, let's say you're kona something Midarabanan. You know what's definitely Durabanan? Kinyan Dalet Amos. You're walking somewhere in the street and there's Dvar Shel Hefker on the street, and you walk within Dalat Amis of it. So Chachamim say, right here, you see this? Chazal say that once you walk within Dalat Amis, even before you pick it up, this say this paperclip becomes yours. Okay, Kinyan D'Rabbana. Okay, I have it in my pocket for 5 years. Finally, I meet the perfect girl, and I want to Mekadosh with her with it. Maybe I need something bigger. So I want to be Mekadosh with it. Can I be Mekadosh with this? Is it going to create a Kinyan D'Raisa? Is it going to create an Ishus D'Raisa, Kedushin D'Raisa? If she cheats on me, is she going to be an Ishus Ish? Okay, other than Rabbeinu Yeruchim, everybody else holds yes, of course it does. So, yeah, I've named Yeruchim, it's a Kishnak, I've named Yeruchim, right. Most of the Shans don't like that. So Reb Shimon says, what's the longest? Why should a Kinyan D'Rabbanan work for something mid'oraisa? And therefore, maybe even the Kinyanim D'Rabbanan that we're mentioning, like Agav, like Chalipin perhaps, which might be D'Rabbanan. Maybe that should help you for getting rid of your Chametz mid'oraisa. Listen to a beautiful longest. Says Reb Shimon says, forget about that I want to be Mekadosh a woman, or want to get rid of my Chametz. If I own this now mid'Rabbanan, shouldn't I be violating an Issa D'Oraisa of Lo Zigzal? How could anything be mine D'Rabbanan? If it's mine D'Rabbanan, that means really D'Oraisa, it's yours. But it became mine D'Rabbanan. That means D'Oraisa, oh, you'll tell me Hefker, Bezin, Hefker. That means, still means. Okay, the Bezin says it's Hefker, but D'Oraisa, really it's owned by somebody else. So says Reb Shimon that what Hefker Bezin Hefker does is it redefines who owns things. It redefines the concept of ownership. Hefker Bezin Hefker, let's assume, could be D'Oraisa. The Kinyan D'Rabbanan redefines what the ownership is. Once the ownership is defined, whether that ownership is defined D'Oraisa, D'Rabbanan, Hefker Bezin Hefker could redefine whoever should own it. Once there's a new owner, Memela, it's theirs, so that they're not in violation of Lo Zigzal. And Memela, they could do all their D'Oraisa Dikadinim with that which has now been redefined as theirs. So what Hefker Bezin Hefker does is it redefines the ownership. Once the ownership is defined as now being mine, I can now be Mekadosh a woman in D'Oraisa, I could be Poda Maisu Sheni with him in D'Oraisa, I could get rid of my use it with Mechiris Chametz in D'Oraisa. That's alumnus of Reb Shimon. Okay, therefore, if I could please pass around this sheet, if you don't mind taking that side, and you'll take this side. This is a sheet that is used when the rabbi meets with the guy, and we will see, this is Rabbi Willig's sheet that he uses to jot with, and he sells to John J. Brown, whom he's sold to for 30 years.
You can use that lomis both for king and for
king. To solve the problem of that it's only Durabatan, yes.
So if you solve through Hefke based on Hefke,
redefine the ownership. This is just lomis. That's just icing on the cake. It's just lomis. To explain why maybe Kenyan Durabatan could work for a Din D'Oraisa. But that's nothing to do with Hefke's Chametz. Let me just go through this because I want to show you what's happening here. So the first, as it is in many contracts, all the whereases are not part of the shtar. They're just the basic understandings that are the background of the agreement, but it's not the contract. The contract is now therefore. So after we all agree that the rabbi is going to sell on behalf of the 100 people in his shul, and we know what chametz is, and the Jews want to get rid of their chametz, and the guy wants to buy the chametz, now therefore, we're going to sell the guy the chametz. How are you going to do it? Look at the third paragraph after now therefore. In order to effect this sale, the buyer agrees to pay the agent. The buyer is the guy. The agent is the rabbi who's selling on behalf of his kehila at the fair market value. Meaning, whatever Cheerios, a box of Cheerios costs, $5 in New York City, we're selling the Cheerios for $5. How am I going to sell it to the guy for the $5 for the Kinyan Kasef? Number one, 2 cents per person now. Or it's not just Cheerios, it's Cheerios and vodka and with other whiskeys, and all the scotches, and my cookies, and my granola bars. It's hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But Kenyan Kesef now, one Shavu Pruta now, which is maybe 4 cents per person now, and the rest will be on the eighth day of, the ninth day of Pesach, meaning the day after Pesach. That's what he'll pay. That's going to be the Kenyan Kesef. Skip the next paragraph. In addition, the buyer is going to give an item of personal property, Kinyan Chalipin, And then we're going to do a third kinyan. We're also going to shake hands, because the Gemara tells us that there's something called kinyan situmta, which we don't have much time to talk about. The Gemara is talking about transferring barrels of wine in the derech. Kinyan situmta is whatever the common
derech
method of sale. Derech ha-chasochim. Thank you. So for example, on 47th Street up to a few years ago, when the Hasidim were primarily the controllers of 47th Street, what was the official gemar of a deal of diamonds? They would shake hands and say, none of you know, mazel u'bracha. You could have a Pakistani guy and an Indian guy. They shake hands, they say two words, mazel u'bracha. This is how it worked in 47th Street, but till now it's a little bit more diversified. Now the Hasidim share has gotten a little smaller, but the Hasidim were in control of the diamond exchange for many decades. Once you shook hands, said mazel u'bracha, that was the gemar kinyan. The same way, like, you know, it's like signing on the dotted line. That was after that, you can't go back. That was the end of a diamond deal. So nowadays, when many times, what's the indication of a deal between people in our community, in our world? Often a handshake. A handshake is a gentleman. A gentleman's handshake is a kinyan situmta. So if your goy is not a goy, but a goya, that could be a little bit uncomfortable, but you have to figure out what's safer to make sure you sell the chametz properly, or get into the issues of negiya shelo b'derech taiva. You know, that's going to be another question. Okay, so we'll also do a handshake, which is kinyan situmta. So we have kinyan kesef, we have kinyan chalipin, we have kinyan situmta. Now, those are things that have nothing to do with karka. Now, we also want to get, hold on please, we also want to get a chatzir and agav. But to do chatzir, what do you have to do first? Rent to him the karka. In order to do agav, what do you need? Same point. You also need to rent to him the karka. So now for that, how are you going to rent to the guy the karka? You're going to have to do another kinyan kesef with the guy, not for the chomet, but for the karka. So now that's the next two paragraphs. Skip the next one, two paragraphs later. In consideration for the foregoing rental provision, that you're going to rent, the Jew will rent, all the Jews, the 100 Jews, are going to rent their wine cellars and their pantries and their shelves to the guy. The buyer, meaning the guy, does pay to the agent an additional 2 cents, an additional shavar pruta, for each Jew's karka. So that means the guy gave his pruta for each Jew for the kinyan kesef. Now the guy is going to give another pruta for each Jew for the kinyan karka. Once you have the karka, we can now do two more kinyanim to the guy. We can now do the kinyan chatzer. Look at the next paragraph. By force of the execution of this rental agreement, the buyer also will acquire the chametz through a kinyan agav and through a kinyan chatzer. So we now have, again, what did we need midaraisa? Either kesef or mashicha, we don't know, so we want to do both. So I do kesef, but I can't do mashicha. So instead of doing mashicha, what am I trying to substitute in lieu of mashicha, which is what I really should use? Well, kesef I did. I'm going to try chalipin. I'll try situmta. I'll try agav. I'll try chatzer. So now I ended up doing four kinyanim to fill the place of mashicha, which is too impractical, because I can't have the guy lift up every box in my whole community. And kesef I'm going to do. So altogether, I've done five kinyanim with the guy. One thing that's very important is that it has to be made clear from the rabbi to the guy, is that each kinyan, it's not like I'm going to do five kinyanim with you to transfer my chametz to you. I'm going to do one kinyan to transfer my chametz. Separate and apart, and I hope that works. Separate and apart, I'm going to do this kinyan to transfer my chametz to you. I hope that works. Separate and apart, we're not saying that it's all the amalgamation of these five kinyan that are giving makta to you. We're saying that each one independently, we just don't know which one is which, so we're going to have to do all five of them. Each one independently will be the kinyan that will be makta to the guy. So right, if you could please look about 40% down, right below where it says 2 cents per person now, the paragraph starts. The understanding is that the sale is absolute and effective immediately. It says somewhere here that I'm going to be doing different kinyanim, and each one is independent, and it doesn't matter if one works, one doesn't work. The fact that one doesn't work, it shouldn't impact the ones that should work. I don't remember where that is. Oh, okay, fine. In the middle of the page, at the 50-yard line. In addition, we're going to do chalipin, we're going to do situmta. These additional methods of acquisition are employed because of questions about the effectiveness of each method. We said, situmta is only drabbanon, chalipin might also be only drabbanon. Maybe chalip at all. What does the pasuk say by chalip? I forgot this. Who knows the pasuk in Rus? Before that, zos hatu'uda be Yisrael. That means the pasuk itself says that kinyan chalipin is for Yisrael. So you're having the goy to kinyan chalipin. That also might be a weakness in using the kinyan chalipin for mechira of the chametz to the goy. So that's another reason why, another weakness of chalipin, which was why I'm hoping one of the, you know, if chalipin ain't working for the goy, maybe some of the others are working. Now, so far I had five kinyanim. Kesef, chalipin, situmta, agav, and chatzer. Guess what? What's not written on the page? But it doesn't have to be written because it is the page.
Shtar.
Shtar. That's the signatures on the bottom. The rabbi and the guy will sign that we are hereby, I'm selling to you, and the rabbi signs, the seller signs, the rabbi is the shliach of the community, and the guy signs to buy for himself, that's the shtar. I'm going to hand over the mesira shtar, when I hand over the shtar to the guy, after we sign it, we do all the kinyanim, we both sign it, then I'm going to hand it to him, hand him this shtar, that's going to be yet a sixth kinyan to try to get my chametz to the guy. So sach hakol, there are six kinyanim. Not on this shtar, there are other shtaros, other rabbanim, use what's also called the kinyan odisa. Kinyan odisa is when somebody declares something to be true, that itself could be a transfer of ownership. Meaning, if I declare that my iPhone is hereby Mr. Finkelstein, so that declaration makes it Mr. Finkelstein's. Odisa, Aleph Vav. What? How does the shtar work on metaltalin?
Yeah.
Maybe it's only for the chatzer? Bum, 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 bum. Hold on, let me see. 1 second. Because metaltalin with the guy, yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the chatzer is only for the, maybe the shtar is only for the karka, not for the metaltalin. I don't remember. You might be right. I might be wrong.
Do we get this notarized or
No, not, contracts don't have to be notarized. I don't think it's the law of notarized. But let me tell you what you're asking. You're asking a question. Somebody asked me. I had a student who was in UCLA law school, and he said a non-religious professor, a non-religious Jewish professor at UCLA, asked him the following question. He said that, sort of what you're asking, the guy asked him, the professor at UCLA asked him, where's the sales tax on the Mechiras Chametz, right? If any given family is selling $100 and I'm selling 100 families, that means I'm selling $10,000 worth of Chametz. So that should be, there should be an $825 sale tax in New York State, 8.25%, right? So there should be, where's the $825? This is what the non-religious law professor asked this from a kid who's a law student in UCLA wearing his yarmulke in law school. He was trying to get under his skin. So this is my student asking. You know what I told him? I told him that, you know who asked this question first? I'm sorry, you know who answered this question first? The emperor. Yes, the emperor. Because this question was asked in the time of Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer was asked in a time that in order for a sale to take place, there was a stamp that the government had to stamp, and there was a tax on that stamp. That's how transactions were, that's how the government made money, by taxing transactions. And the Chasam Sofer was asked by, again, a similar person to the UCLA law professor who probably didn't wear a yarmulke, that Mechiras Chametz shouldn't work because since Medina de Malchusa, it only works if you pay the tax and get the stamp, and Mechiras Chametz, we don't have it stamped and it's not taxed, so it shouldn't work. Guess what? The emperor, there was a Malshin who asked this question to the emperor, and you know what the emperor said? I mean, this Malshin wanted to say we should charge the Jews, you should be able to take a lot of money off the Jews. You know what the emperor said in the time of the Chasam Sofer? In Austria? Hungary? Hungary, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Hungary. The emperor said, I don't have the Lashon, but the Chasam Sofer has the Lashon. It's not a sale, it's just religion. That's the Chasam Sofer. That's what the emperor told the Malshin in the time of the Chasam Sofer. So somebody said, oh, so maybe that makes a problem. That should make it a problem, because if the emperor is saying that Dina de Malchusa, we don't call it a transaction,
no,
that's why, don't use the word haram, because that's a loaded word, which means,
right.
Well, you're right, you are right. So therefore, that's what the emperor responded. Anyway, the poskim are not so concerned whether it actually fits with Din Machlokes Dina or not. That's less of a concern because Lamaisa, we're trying to get rid of our chametz for halachic purposes, and that's enough, says the Divrei Chaim, the Sanzer Rav. Even if it doesn't necessarily work, al pidina de machlokes dina. Although you should have it work, al pidina de machlokes dina. Okay, that's the first three quarters of the shiur. I want to add one or two more points. Yeah.
One question. What the downside of Kinyan Agav? We said what was the.
There are a few downsides of Kinyan Agav. The main one is that it might only be drabanon. Another one is that maybe you have to actually on karka.
Well, if you say that the bagel and the cottage cheese, if you use the
cream cheese,
if you use the mahalach that the brocha is also covers the
that was
the
my
cheese,
answer.
Then you may be already
work on a doraisa.
Working on a doraisa.
That was my answer. That was my answer. But not everybody's going to agree to that. And we don't want our Mechiras Chametz to be, hopefully it should work, according to Rabbi Orlean's answer to Shver, you know, applying Hilchitz Brachos to Chosh Mishra. But Rav Shimon was one who applies it, not me. He says the word Iker and Tafel by Agav. Yeah.
So, when we're saying that this is being bought with the 5 cents and being bought back with the 19 cents.
No, it's not correct. It's being bought for the $100 with a down payment, a Kinyan Kesef now of 5 cents, and the outstanding money that is. That is part of this kinyan is just turned into a milveh. It's not a sale for 5 cents. It's a sale for $100, of which 5 cents are being paid now, and the other is is on credit now to be paid up later.
And at the end of Pesach, so what's
he's going to have to pay me back.
So is this a second transaction where it's being bought?
Yes, that is correct. After Pesach, the rabbi. No one sees this because it's less exciting because everyone's busy going home and eating, taking out their Cheerios. But the rabbi is stuck in shul, meeting with the guy and buying back the chametz to, if the guy is willing, hopefully most of the times they are, buying back the chametz for the Jews in the community. If the guy happened to die, so who owns the chametz?
His
Yarshim. So what we often do is, in case this happens, and we always pray for the welfare of the guy who buys our chametz, so that he should be able to sell pattas, we do make a tanai. Many rabbanim will say, in the event that something, God forbid, prevents us from meeting Motze Pesach, please don't consider gzeila.
Our attorney,
we don't have him assigned a parental. We say, please don't consider gzeila if after Pesach, we eat that which is entirely yours. We do make such a tanai. Not a tanai, chas, we can't make a mechila tanai. We ask him for that mechila after Pesach if, for whatever reason, he can't make it to the set meeting with the rabbi after Pesach. If you could please take the authorization forms. You're going to be rabbanim. The Baal Batra are going to come to you, and you're going to want them to fill out a form or sign the name on a list. And I want to tell you a little bit about this form. A few things. First of all, there are three parts to this form. The top part is saying that you are telling that I empower the rabbi or someone he designates to sell my chametz for me. This is called a power of attorney form. In Hebrew, shtar hashah, an authorization form. This is not a mechira form. The mechira form is the one with a lot of little letters that we just went through with the different kinyanim that works actually as a shtar. This is just an authorization form of your balabas empowering you, the rabbi, to be a shliach for him to sell his chametz to the guy. What happens if he is very busy and he can't make it to your office to fill out this form? Well, he could appoint you on the telephone. Except for the fact that there is a question among the Rishonim, but what we try to do is we do a kinyan chalipin to show his seriousness in appointing you. So when the rabbi does the kinyan chalipin, when the rabbi does the kinyan chalipin to the balabas who comes to his office, so a balabas comes to my office, he says, Rabbi, I want you to buy my chametz. What do I say? I am not interested in buying your chametz, but I'm happy to act as your shliach to sell your chametz to Eddie Vasquez. That's my guy in Five Towns. To Eddie Vasquez. So he says, Rabbi, I really want you to do this. I say, you sure? Show me that you're serious. He says, okay, I'm going to do a kinyan chalipin with you to show that I'm really appointing you a shliach. How do you do kinyan chalipin? Kinyan chalipin is Caleb Shell Kona. So who's the Kona here?
Rabbi.
Well, not really. It's Eddie Vasquez. But I'm the Kona in the same sense of I'm not being Kona the chametz from him, but I'm accepting the shlichus. He wants me to do the shlichus, so I will use Caleb Shel Kona. What am I going to use? A tie. I try to use a skinny tie to get comments. I forget it. Yeah, Balbatan like when you use something cool to, you know, that draws attention to it. It's just cooler for the rabbi to use cool things. Fine. So you lose something that the rabbi will give, something, some of his, or like a Mont Blanc pen. Rabbi has a Mont Blanc. Oh, wow. Something, you know what I mean? Or like a Hermes tie, something, you know, something to. Fine. Now, many rabbanim, depends if they're old time, new time, don't actually write where the chametz is located, what the chametz is, how much its value. Why do we have this in this shtar? It's for one reason only.
Kamir
Stas. There has to be the whole problem that the Bechor Shor, that Rabbi Hess mentioned earlier, the Bechor Shor said this is a little bit of a harama. So we want to make it as little bit of a harama as possible so we get as detailed as you could be. That makes it as much smichas das as there could be. I know what I'm selling. He knows what he's buying. He knows where it is. He knows the approximate value. It doesn't mean that if you're off, the people go nuts when they have to fill us in. I don't remember, I don't know exactly how much a box of Cheerios costs. It's usually a difference in the men and the women. Like, the women say, yeah, they'll give you a number, the men are like, I have no clue what I have, I have no clue how much it's worth. But okay. No. Let's go to, will you be in a different time zone for Pesach? If yes, please specify where. So again, this is not on a regular, not everybody has this on their shtar. Why do I put it in? Because of a question among the Achronim, which is the following Chakira. Is the din of Isser Chametz a din in the Chametz or in the Bailim of the Chametz? If I could say it, Yeshivish or Brisker, is it Isser Chametz a din in the Gavra or a din in the Chavtza? Why is that important? Because what happens if he's going to Israel and his Chametz is sitting there in Tinek or in the Five Towns or in Passaic? Or in Washington Heights, but he's in Israel. So he's in Israel. Let's work the other way. Let's say he's in Los Angeles. His chametz is in Los Angeles. He comes to me for Yontif. So he's starting Yontif. He's starting actually Yud Dalid when the Isser chametz begins, Erev Pesach. He's starting Yontif when his chametz is not yet Pesach for his chametz. So who do we follow? So the one who says, who uses those words, is the din of the Gabra, the din of the Chefz, is actually, oh, I forgot who says that, Lashon. The Menashe Katan Klein, I think. The Mishnas, no, the Menashe Katan Klein. I forgot the name of the Shas Tshuva. So he raises this point, and he paskins and others paskin. Primarily, I think the Achronim assume that we follow not the Chametz, but we follow the person, the Gavra. Wherever you are, that's the time that determines your presence for Pesach, for violating Chametz. So therefore, if you're in Eretz Yisrael for Pesach, that means that Pesach is over. Let's say you're in New York. Your Chametz is in Los Angeles and you're in New York. So you sell with me. I'm a rabbi in the Five Towns in New York. I'm going to buy back the chametz right after Pesach when it's still chametz in Los Angeles. When it's still Pesach in Los Angeles, so that's okay because you're now here and Pesach is over. But what happens if you go to Biltmore in Arizona for Pesach and I'm buying back the chametz? I'm buying back the chametz when Pesach is over here. For you, you still have another 2 hours of Pesach. I'm buying back the chametz already. So I have to tell the Balabas, you're going to be in Arizona, in the Biltmore for Pesach. Make sure that you have in mind, what? After Pesach, when I'm buying it back, you have to have in mind not to be Kona, the Chametz back, till you finish your Pesach. You can't be Kona something Bal Karchacha. When I'm buying it back from the guy, and it's not going to go straight into your shoes if you don't want it to. So you have in mind that you're not willing, it's 2 hours, it's 5 p.m., in a beautiful, sunny Arizona day, when I'm sitting here in the dark cold of New York City, buying the chametz back, so he has in mind, the guy in Arizona, who's just there for Yantif, is going to have in mind not to be Kona the chametz back. So that's why I always make sure in terms of where we are.
What's the status of the chametz during that time, in those few hours?
It's the guys.
It's It's still the guy's,
because the Jew wasn't yet kohen. It doesn't become hafker. It wasn't hafker. The challah, yeah, the guy wanted it out of his ashus, but the Jew didn't take it back yet. So it's still the guy's until the Jew wishes, wills. It's like any chalos kinyan that there's a ma'aseh kinyan now, and the chalos will happen 2 hours later. Fine. Now, let's talk about the next point. Rabosai. Many balabata will come to you and say, Rabbi, I'm going away for Pesach. I'm spending $5,000 per person to take myself, my wife, my 6 children, and my 20 grandchildren away for Pesach. So the first thing you should tell them is if you give that to the day schools, you will solve our tuition crisis. It's hard for rabbis to say that. So if you're not going to say that, you'll say, okay, I'm happy that you're going away for Pesach. But they then say, since I'm spending $47,000, the whole reason why I'm doing that is so I don't have to clean for Pesach. So could I just sell the house, my house, to the guy? You say, I'm not a broker for sales, but I'm happy to rent your house to the guy. But then they say, it depends who it is. You have to be a little bit discern. I say to them, but don't you want to do a mitzvah? Don't you want to do a mitzvah of bedikas chametz? So here, I want to talk about this for just 2 minutes. Of when could you sell, rent your whole house to the guy and not have to do bedikas chametz at all? So let's start with this. The Rav Yah, who's early Ashkenazi Rishon, very early, the Rav Yah says that, without getting into exactly what he says, Rav Yah holds that bedikas chametz is not just a way of getting out of owning chametz, it's also mitzvah drabanan that's mutal al every gavra. It's a mitzvah drabanan on every Jew to do a mitzvah of bedikas chametz. And therefore, what's going to happen if you move out of a house and go on a shayara, is what the case of the Rav Yah is saying. He's saying that you're not going to be able to do a bedikas chametz on your shayara, on your caravan, on your cruise somewhere, and therefore you better do a bedika on your house that you leave, even if you're not going to be in that house, even if you don't own you were mafkir the chametz in that house, you still have to do a bedika because you're a Jew, and Jews have to do a bedika. What that means is that if you're going to a hotel, your balabas is going to a hotel, and they're going to leave their house within 30 days before Pesach, it's very nice that they could sell their whole house to the guy, and therefore the house is not, they're not going to be with the chametz, and the house is going to be sold to a guy, rented to a guy, but they didn't fulfill the mitzvah d'rabbanan of bedikas chametz. Rav Yoh says that's not cool, you have a mitzvah on the gavra of fulfilling the mitzvah. So the Chasam Sofer has the following suggestion. The Chasam Sofer is, this is what I often do, and this will explain this second to bottom paragraph. What the Chasam Sofer says is you could lease all of your house to the guy with the exception of one room. One room you'll keep for yourself. Why do you keep one room for yourself? So you could be bodek easily. You take the living room. Okay, so you spend 20 minutes cleaning the living room. You don't have to do all the toys in the basement. You don't have to do all the drawers. You don't have to do all the pockets in the closets. You don't have to do the kitchen and the dining room. There's a lot of crumbs. You just do the living room, the bathroom, whatever room is. And you'll do a real bedika there with a bracha. And the rest of the room, the rest of your house, you'll rent to the guy. That's why I have in this shtar that I'm going to sell my entire home. This only applies, of course, if somebody's not going to be there. And if I think that they could be machmir for the Rav Yah and keep a room for themselves. Sometimes you get a person, they're very anxious, they're incredibly anxious, they're very busy, they can't handle any. So then I'll just say, just rent your house to the guy and don't do a bedika. But if a person is a little firmer and is willing to do a little bit more work and could handle, you know, cleaning one room, again, yeah, it really depends on, you know, I could have 2 people come to me, one after the other. One is just very anxious, or maybe they just want to take care of the chametz issues and you want to make it as easy as you can for them for religious purposes. So I'll say, okay, just rent your house to the guy, you're taken care of, you don't have to do bedikah. Somebody's a little firmer and a little able, competent, and able to do a little bit more. So I'll say, you know what, why don't you rent the rest of your house to the guy and keep for yourself the living room, and that living room is where you'll be mekayem your mitzvah d'rabbanan, bedikas chametz, there. Now there's a machlokas about the following situation. Let's say you rent your whole house to the guy. When do you rent your house to the guy? On the morning when we sell the chametz to the guy. You rent to him the whole house, which is your dalet in the morning. Right after Zman Isra Chametz, that's when, you know, 10:30 is Isra Chametz, 10:45 we sell it to the guy. Did you have to do bedikah the night before? I'll say that again. This is the question that the Chasam Sofer and the Nesius were asked. If you do bedika on lel pesa. I'm sorry, you dalit at night. Do you have to bedika if you know that you're selling to the guy the next morning? You're renting your house to the guy for the whole duration of Pesach the next morning. If you're going to be there for Pesach, you have to do bedika. You're not going to be there for Pesach. And you know tomorrow morning you're going to rent the whole house to the guy. Do you have to do bedika the night before? The Chasam Sofer says it's obvious you don't have to do bedika there because you're not going to be there and you're selling to the guy. It's not going to be yours for Chavim. Why do you do bedika the night before? Because you're going to be there for Pesach. Or it's going to be yours for Pesach. But it's not going to be yours for Pesach. You don't have to do bedika there. That sounds great. And therefore, according to the Chasam Sofer, if you're going to be selling your house to the guy and you dial it in the morning when the rabbi sells the chametz to the guy and rents the houses to the guy, so you didn't have to do bedik the night before. However, the nesivis in the Makar Chayim, which is his parish on the Shulchan Aruch Hilchas Pesach, says that you don't know if the guy will end up showing up tomorrow morning. And furthermore, who owns it? Lel Bedikas Chametz, when you have a mitzvah Bedikas Chametz. You still own it. He's not going to own it till tomorrow morning. And therefore, you own it while there's a bedik, while there's a chiyah bedika, you do have to do a bedika. Even if you're going to sell it to the guy the next morning. So according to that Makor Chaim, you're in a little bit of a bind. Because even though you're spending $47,000 to go away for Pesach, but you're only leaving after Lel Bedikas Chametz. You have a late night, a midnight flight to Arizona. So you're home at 7:42 when there's lel bedikas chametz, when there's a mitzvah bedikas chametz. So according to the Chasam Sofer, no, you're going to be away, you sell your whole house, you're fine. But according to Makor Chayim and Nesivos, you're obligated to do bedikas chametz because right now it's 7:42, mitzvah bedikas chametz, and you're home, and it's yours, you have to do bedikas chametz. You have to spend the next 4 hours until your flight to Arizona cleaning for chametz. What do you mean? But you spent $47,000 going there. Why do you have to do this bedikas chametz? So you know what the solution is? To do a mechiras yud gimel. Which is why I have a different shtar. Actually, this is the Mechiras Yud Gimel. Mechiras Yud Gimel, I do a sale for people in Israel who are 7 hours earlier, and for people who want to get rid of their house before Lel Bedikas Chametz sets in. So that even the Nesivis, even the Makor Chaim, who says that if you own it, even if you're going to sell it to the guy, rent it to the guy for all the Pesach, and you're not going to be home, but if it's yours, Lel Bedikas Chametz, you have to check. But if you sell it before Lel Bedikas Chametz, then it's not yours anymore. So if Shki is, let's say, 6 p.m. and say 7 p.m. and say it's 7:42, I sell it to the guy at 4:30 in the afternoon, at 5:30 in the afternoon, before Bedikas Chametz, so the guy already owns the land, owns the house, before Lel Bedikas Chametz. Then everyone agrees, this is what the Mishnah Berurah suggests, and everyone agrees that there's no requirement of doing a Bedikas Chametz. Except for the fact that the Rav Yossi says it's a mitzvah to do it, so therefore I give the option of cleaning up, of keeping one room for you. I want to finish off with 2 points, because I really want to finish in the next minute. What time is it for real? 2:28. On the bottom, I have a chumrah that most people don't have. Rav Henkin has this chumrah. I found it from Rabbi Neuberger. It's from Rav Henkin. That this, I want, instead of the Jew making me the shliach to sell for him, I have a shtar mechira from the Jew himself to Eddie Vasquez. Instead of the Jew authorizing me to do the mechiras, and the other shtar being the shtar that I sell on their behalf to Eddie, I have the Jew sign a shtar mechira, make this into a shtar mechira itself, not just an authorization form, not just a shtar hashar, not just the power of attorney appointing me the shliach to sell for him, but I make this, when he signs that, he himself is makna the chametz and the karka to the guy directly. That's this additional thing on the bottom, which again is a chumrah. You could take this bottom paragraph off and it's still perfect authorization form. That's just a chumrah of Henkin to make the shtar hashad, this authorization form, into a shtar mechira itself. We're going to end here. The only point that we didn't talk about is the machlokas early achronim. If, let's say, there's somebody who's not religious, or somebody who's demented, or somebody who is in a coma, can you sell their chametz for them? Because do we say, Zachin le'adam shalav b'fanav? But what about Zachin me'adam? Could you take away his chametz without his authorization? The Trumas Hadeshin says you can, the Ramah paskens that you can, the Ketzos argues. But nice, the Ketzos is arguing on a Trumas Hadeshin and a Ramah. So Mikra Hadin, if a Rav finds himself in such a situation, you could sell for the non-religious people who aren't doing their mechira. So if somebody has a non-religious parent And if you bring up anything religious, they scream at you, they fight with you, you could just sell their chametz anyway. What? We'll worry about that at a different time. Even if they're going to eat it, at least they didn't own it. So at least you minimize mechiras chametz. Rabosei, thank you for coming. I think we can go downstairs for a minute.
Are they stealing them from the gun?
Better that he steals it than...